Tonight I have the honor of introducing poet Dean Young. He is the author of more than 10 books of poetry, including Bender, New and Selected Poems, which, if you look over there, is for sale right after the reading, so stop by. Also, Elegy on Toy Piano, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, Strike Anywhere, which won the Colorado Poetry Prize, and Primitive Mentor, shortlisted for the International Griffin Poetry Prize. He is also the author of The Art of Recklessness, Poetry as Assertive Force and Contradiction, a book of prose about poetry. He has received fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation and the National Endowments for the Arts, as well as an Academy Award in Literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. And he is the William Livingston Chair of Poetry at the University of Texas at Austin. I first started reading, encountering Dean's work when I was in grad school and he was teaching on the poetry side. And I didn't know him there, but through my friends, I knew his reputation because they were his students. You know, they loved him, they loved his classroom, they loved his work. It has been said that Dean Young's poems are as entertaining as a three-ring circus and as imaginative as a canvas by Hieronymus Bosch. He is one of the most praised, inventive, and distinguished poets of his generation, and we are very proud to welcome him back to Provincetown and to the Fine Arts Work Center, where he was a poetry fellow in 1986 and 1987. So please join me in welcoming Dean Young.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back at the Work Center. I would say it's wonderful to be here, but this place wasn't here when I was here. All the readings were in the gallery, which often smelled. One of my first experiences when I drove up to the Work Center, there was a visual artist in the parking lot melting Roplex on a dead gall with a blowtorch. And we got out of the car and we were just looking at her and she said, "What?" I thought, okay, I'm home. This is called Could Have Danced All Night. The wolf appointed to tear me apart is sure making slow work of it. This morning, just one eye weeping, a single chip out of my back, and the usual maniacal wooden bird flutes pecking my brain. Listen to that feeble howl, like fangs is something to regret, like having fangs is something to regret, like we shouldn't give thanks for bloodthirst. Even my idiot neighbor backing out without looking could do a better job. Even that leaning diseased tree, or dream of a palsied hand squeezing the throat. But we've been at this for years, lying exposed on the couch in the fat of the afternoon, staring down the moon among the night blooms. What good's a reluctant wolf? The other wolves just get it drunk, then knot it to a post. Poor pup, here's my hand. Bite. This is a poem about sitting down to write, and probably many of you have had this experience. And you write something down, and you think, wow, that sounds pretty good. And then you realize somebody else wrote it. And so I had all these echoes and misquotes in my head that I felt I was trying to avoid, and then I just thought, fuck it, just let them all out. This is called Rough Drafts. Western wind, rearrange me. Bail out bliss and crunch it. I have been half in love with Vicky Dowojak. The world of do is the world of do-do. Often I'm permitted to return to Kmart. My best robot shoots rockets from its chest. The earliest form of polo was played with human heads. Death creeps me out, but I'm still attracted to its tongue in my mouth. I heard a fly buzz the day I made pickled eggs. Whatever I'm the child of must be something big. All the new thinking is about loss, and in this it resembles lots of my old socks. Something's skipping in the fossil record. I too hop from branch to branch with an inordinate fondness for beetles. My pecker's giving me problems. I wonder lonely and out loud. Luckily, my sister follows me around with her journal. I like those old jingles, downward on extended wing ding. No ideas but in ka-ching. It's 12:20. No, wait, it's 1:15. What time is it where you are? I like an explosion that leaves a star. I like my steak with a good sear. I hope I end up far from here. My doctor says I'm ruining my liver. Take me to a different river. As poets, we're supposed to feel gratitude for any kind of attention our work gets. But somebody wrote a review of Bender, and they made it really personal, and they said that I'd outgrown surrealism, which offended me to no end, as if you can outgrow surrealism or grow into surrealism. So I wrote this poem in a response to that. It's called Why I Haven't Outgrown Surrealism, No Matter What That Moron Reviewer Wrote. I still love the sound of breaking, the tearing of the page, fruit that splits when it's ripe. Not sticks and strings or a 30-page instruction manual when I need a kite, when I need a dragon in the sky. More and more, only the irrational holds me to the earth. Not that I need Apollo knocking off my helmet to tell me so. Give me a bird crashing a window in the darkness of daylight, a red wine stain on my good white shirt, and a dog park where we scatter Chloe, some blowing back on our shoes in a very Chloe-like manner, two living dogs coming up to us wagging hard enough to levitate in recognition. The body is a vessel of flames flickering, and even in dreams I say my love's name. So picture me for verisimilitude, made entirely of sunflowers, but keep the long scar in the center of my chest. Under it, a grim doctrine frolics on the dissecting table. I, who have been restored by cardiac shocks, dropped into the morning, wanton and struck. Any questions so far? Bird-shaped cliff. Sometimes I think about climbing a telephone pole, but then what? Telephone poles have almost nothing to do with telephones. But I liked how a curly cord went into the receiver, then a sturdier black wire went into the wall, through the wall, out to a pole, then miles and miles of wire, pole, sometimes underground, underwater, to whoever you needed who'd dry her hands thinking, gosh, now what, or thank heavens, or oh no, and say hello as a question or a lie. then the intimate negotiations and sorry confessions and flat jokes would take word form from excited electrons moving through the wires. And sometimes a cowboy would suddenly gallop to town through dust and cactus, yup, a storm's a-coming, to call someone, but the fates intend otherwise, because that's what fates always intend. So the cowboy must listen for the rest of his days to the phone make a funny insect performing Shakespeare sound, until the operator comes on and says, sorry, but that calling area's been hit by the blast. And the cowboy thinks, what blast? What blast? Riding off into the moonlessly blue chaparral. How to draw a circle. After we get closer and the frog's quiet, my dog says, see how the frog quiets when approached? It's cooling off as it gets dark, as if the earth has just realized light equals heat. We come to a stick pretending to be a snake. Is it not wise for a snake to pretend to be a stick? I keep thinking back to the mean things said at the meeting, some from my own mouth. How $40 just vanished from my pocket. How I doubted if my brother was going to make it the whole way across the bridge. My dog has stopped and is looking at me with a moon in each eye. This is the part of our walk by the yucca festooned with Christmas lights and the mannequin half sticking out of the ground, where once I heard they filmed a commercial for mayonnaise. When my dog asks what I learn, nothing, I say, which is the same as saying it. Good, says my dog. Before enlightenment, walk the dog. After enlightenment, walk the dog. And then we turn toward the blue door of our own home. I don't get out much, and when I do, it's usually with my dog. So we're not out long. Glorious particles in the atmosphere aflame. My dog loves being airborne. She leaps over the coffee table onto the couch. Never will we be sealed in the narcropolis again. Leaps when she infers a biscuit, a walk, a piece of crystal broken off from the original idea of light. Then she gets introspective and lies on the rug. We're surrounded by books, and in each a poet holds the sun in some sort of basket. Then his or her skull starts to glow. One more minaret to the mind. When my dog misses her puppies, she gets the walrus from the toolbox, from the toy box, and finishes ripping its fluffy white guts out. Look, she says, snow. Even my dog is more creative than me, although I make a wicked margarita. The secret is capsaicin. The secret is drinking from a test tube. The secret is ruined dreams. Something's just exploded in outer space, but don't worry. By the time it reaches us, we'll long be ash by other means. Mark Strand died, great poet. I honor him. This is called Exit Strategies. Second to last day of November, 2014, a year I can almost admit to surviving. In an airport in North Carolina, Lori looks up from her phone and says, sad news. No one is allowed to live forever, so that part isn't a surprise. The whole flight back, I try to block out the kid screaming behind me, even though he is me. The stewardess tries her toy plane trick, followed by the beverage cart. I wish I was an ancient Chinese poet, so drunk even the moon seems sober. I wish my mind was a flower. Carry me, oh carry me home. I was talking to in one of my classes to my students about how we feel this pressure in poems often to come to a point where the poem says, and then I realized, or then I knew I would never be the same. And that actually comes to us from Romanticism. So I thought, why don't we just skip all that other stuff and just have that moment. So this poem's called Romanticism 101. Then I realized I hadn't secured the boat. Then I realized my friend had lied to me. Then I realized my dog was gone no matter how much I called in the rain. All was change. Then I realized I was surrounded by aliens disguised as orthodontists having a convention at the motel breakfast bar. Then I could see into the life of things, that systems seek only to reproduce the conditions of their own reproduction. If I had to pick between shadows and essences, I'd pick shadows. They're better dancers. They always sing their telegrams. Their old gods do not die. Then I realized the very futility was salvation in this greeny entanglement of breaths. Yeah, as if. Then I realized even when you catch the mechanism, the trick still convinces. Then I came to in Texas and realized rockabilly would never go away. Then I realized I'd been drugged. We were all chasing nothing, which left no choice but to intensify the chase. I came to handcuffed and gagged. I came to intubated and packed in some kind of foam. This too is how ash moves through water. And all this time the side door unlocked. Then I realized repetition could be an ending. Then I realized repetition could be an ending. This poem is called Watcher of the Skies, and it's a quote, and no, it's not a quote from that great Genesis song, back when Peter Gabriel was still the vocalist. They got it from Keats. Was the idea to hail the sequined dark, to be naked as a horse, a meadow, a glove, lightning struck, wanton, and plucked? Does all music come from hollowness or impact? To purge, 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 then glut the self with sorrow until it splits like a pomegranate. To look on new planets. To let the dead trees stand. To continue to sing as a hatchet sings, as a feather in an owl's wing, silently. To breathe without stumble. To develop a stanza with the integrity of a sonnet but rhymes that don't pounce, without any irritable reaching after fact. To write a play for money, enter an elephant at the end of the third act. To nurse a brother, build a soul. Superannuations of dust, compensatory ambergris from the skulls of Greeks. The idea was the poison in the body could be drawn into blisters. The poison in the blood bled out. To hang from silver nails by vascular gasps. To soothe the throat. To hope. The idea was to avoid all excitement. years of mercury, laudanum, intoxications on art. The idea that sexual frustration played a part. Byron's notion that a nasty review was enough. A starvation diet. Those last weeks not even reading Fanny's letters. Then the bedding burned, walls scraped, all the crockery busted as dictated by law. The idea was to live forever, to have a name writ in water. Not trying to win no prize. When I listen to Rain, I give up, especially the early acoustic stuff. I ain't no monkey, but I got a bell on my bike. How do you mend a broken etc.? This is me giving up. Still, the great pulse of pointlessness drives me forward, although I don't know what qualifies as forward. A flower? Death? There's a waterfall between us that can drown out almost any scream, all to the good. I don't know if you're ready to be confronted with the small black screws that fell out of you in the library, but who is? Now I want to say something about giraffes, their long blue tongues, and what was thought until recently their total silence. One of my poems lately have seemed like the poems of a shut-in. This is called The Usual. Even though I screwed a no-soliciting sign to the front door, here comes the short-sleeved white shirts to tell me about the end of the world. I love the end of the world, but they won't even entertain giant grubs erupting from the earth mutated by bomb testing. There's a single genetic switch that will give all of us superpowers, and I can already feel myself stretch and hover. One of them is sailing away in a thimble in his own eye, while the other just looks peaked. They don't want to watch the movie where the couple first meets and immediately their shadows start making out. They don't want a slip of pickle juice in their Bloody Marys, which they don't want either. And my cat, the devil incarnate, freaks them out, eviscerating his toy mouse. Okay, I say. See all that bamboo growing wild outside? Let's cut it down and make a raft. I'll go get the machetes. Everyday escapees. My poor students. All I ask of them is to grow antennae, to lie down with lava and rise with snow, grow tongues from their math assignments, and no, Melissa, your mother won't approve the bioluminescent smear on your communion dress. The world fidgets in uneasy relationship to our statements about it, nevertheless producing silver buds from ragged limbs, like the luster in late Frank Sinatra songs. Finally, when I got off the sixth floor, I felt like I was walking out into the sky. And aren't we all pedestrians of air? Doesn't it feel all wrong to turn our backs on the ocean, on an ant? On those Chagall windows, you have to go through a gauntlet of ancient armor to get to. What was her name? That night nurse so deft her blood draws didn't wake me up. Don't get me wrong, I want to wake up. I want my old dog to show me all that wolf light she hides inside, even though she thinks I won't understand. even though her vet and I conspire to keep her alive forever. Unlikely materials. Continued soggy today in the personal, although two strangers smiled at me. One because I couldn't open a plastic bag either, the other because I stepped aside as if I was holding the door for her, even though it was an automatic door. The peaches, first of the season, were tiny and powerful as baby rattlesnakes. A branch had fallen on the driveway by the time I got home, like a friendly arm over a shoulder. So I sat in the car, listening to the rain, trying to find its melody, not wanting to flunk my student for not turning in his 20 pages on clouds after promising he would. "You're singing," I say every class. Even in the heart of an artichoke, there's probably a god. Energy is stored in a triphosphate bond, then released when that bond is broken. Is this why everything is so hard? "One big pearl," said the Buddha, then glanced shyly around to make sure no one understood him. We know only that the spirit is not matter, is not sap stilling in the veins, or even mist coalesced from the last breath, sang Orpheus before being torn apart. I'll read two more poems, and I promise that's all I'll read. I always hate that when poets says, "I'll read two more," and then it's like two more and two more. It's like, you tell me you're going to read two more. I can rouse myself out of my lethargy and pay attention, but don't play tricks with me. This is called Gizzard Song, and the sort of the mode of the poem is it's a telephone conversation. And there are two people speaking in the poem. You'll be able to figure it out. "Dean, it's Harry. No birds are nesting in my birdhouses. What could it mean?" "I don't know why," answered the phone. "There's already too much going on in Nagaduchi's. And not even hello. Harry, you haven't even asked me about my operation. You sick?" "No, I had a heart transplant." "They do those with lasers now, right? Labradaisically?" "No, mine was more complicated," I say, "with knives." "Ouch," he deducts. "But you must be okay now. Antlers are growing out of my floors. An evil snowman delivers my mail. And I'm taking so many pills, my tongue's purple. And hair is growing out of my forehead, so no." "Well, sorry, but you're the only person I can call. No one knows the habits and inklings of our feathered friends like you. A query about a foundling fledgling, a moody rooster, an owl with self-esteem problems, you're the go-to guy. Even if you feel like a wobbly oblong peg driven into a wedge of cheddar, you're the guy who holds it all together, not only in avian affairs, but all atmospheric matters. Comets and Martians, your métier, angels and even clouds, for crying out loud. What will we do without you? One day, no birds, then stars all fall down, then what? Nothing. The void. The dark maw of zilch." He was working himself into a fine pitch, and I had to admit, even if he was feeding you regurgitated worms, he could make you feel special, and all my pains, my multitudinous pains, would shrink to a single whinge, like what a word makes when it's misspelled. Pilgrim, I say, you need to clear out the old nests. Your house is probably jammed with others' wings and mud and stuff. Birds, like the rest of us, like clean starts. And as I spoke, I felt my new heart roost deeper in my chest, fluffing out its blue breast, looking for something to peck. And this is how mercy and poetry moves through the world. So this last poem I'm going to read also makes mention of a rather extreme medical procedure I went through. And also the poet Alexander Vedensky, who was a contemporary of Mayakovsky. It's called Believe in Magic. You, that sound familiar to you? Love and Spoonful song, Believe in Magic. The great John Sebastian. Believe in magic? How could I not? Have seen a man walk up to a piano and both survive. Have turned the exterminator away. Seen lipstick on a wine glass not shatter the wine. Seen rainbows in puddles. Been recognized by stray dogs. I believe reality is approximately 65% if. All rivers are full of sky. Waterfalls have minds. We all come from slime, even alpacas. I believe we're surrounded by crystals, not just Alexander Vedensky. Maybe dysentery, maybe a guard's bullet did him in. Nevertheless, I believe there are many kingdoms left. The Declaration of Independence was written with a feather. A single gem has throbbed in my chest my whole life, even though this is my second heart. Because the first failed, such was its opportunity, was cut out in pieces and incinerated. I asked. And so was denied the chance to regard my own heart in a jar. Strange tangled imp, we slick it in red brambles. You know what it feels like to hold a burning piece of paper? Maybe even trying to read it as the flames get close to your fingers until all you're holding is a curl of ash by its white ear tip, yet the words still hover in the air. That's how I feel now. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Dean that they'd like to ask? He likes Q&As. He told me last night. Unless you've changed your mind.
Two more.
Anyone?
Who was your best teacher in elementary school?
Mrs. Crum. Yeah, that was her name. Third grade, that's when I first started writing poems. Friday was Creative Writing Day in English, and I think that was very important to me because creative writing always felt like a time of abandonment and freedom. And she just let us write whatever we wanted. I hadn't thought of Miss Crum for a while. She was about 6'3", powerfully strange looking woman.
What was your time here like when you were a fellow?
struggle with my work, but I made some lasting friends, and it helped me develop a kind of faith and certainty that this is what I wanted to do, and maybe it would work out. And you know, that's the thing I tell my students is that the main thing about being a writer, you have to have two things. You have to maintain your spirit and get your work done. And the best way to maintain your spirit is to get your work done. But particularly for poets, there's a vital quality of that work that you have no control over. And that's often the most important part of it. So there are going to be just dreadful periods where your writing crack. But you just have to endure them with the faith that that's actually going to contribute to when you're not writing like crap. Writing well is easy. Writing like crap is really, really hard. And it takes many, many hours to write garbage. Just many, many hours. But poems are often instantaneous, so it's really a strange business. I like what Lenny Michael said. He says, writing isn't work, it's just hard. But you do have to, you know, partly it taught me to do the time and how not to, you know, well, at least develop some kind of ways of not going completely crazy.
What does reading poetry do to you, or for you? Has it ever helped you in any way?
Oh yeah, it's probably the thing that helps me more than anything. Is reading. You know, to some extent, when I'm writing, I always have other books around, and I read without comprehension, which is I think a strange skill to acquire. Because it's companionable, and I'm trying to hear a song. I'm trying to hear something that I can feel a sense of abandonment with and certainty simultaneously. And reading other poems is a great help aid in that.
People have described you as a surrealist. Are you?
André Breton declared surrealism finished in 1966, I believe it was. Surrealism...
Well done. Totally finished.
Well, capital S surrealism. I mean, yeah. Also surrealism has been around as long as people using their imagination has been around. It's like what Frank O'Hara said about the avant-garde. He said, there'll always be an avant-garde when people are, as long as people are bored with other people's ideas. Surrealism was concerned with a revolution of mind, bringing about a complete redistribution of the materials of the world and a complete political reorganization. Not with, as Breton said, the production of literary objects. That's what I'm interested in, the productions of literary objects. So even though I am on bended knee to André Breton, an extremely unlikable man, I don't really consider myself a surrealist. I haven't earned that. I'm not political in my work any more than stating anything with freedom and abandonment is political. Thank you, Gary.
Well, thank you very much.
I have a question, and I was just trying to, like, you know, really put it into the right words, so I might stumble over it a couple of times. I want to pick your brain about when, like, you talk about struggling through writing, kind of like, and I see in your work that you're like, you're really comfortable with like just kind of saying it as it is and letting a song kind of fall into place. I don't know what, if you could think about something in your life that made you feel more comfortable with that.
I don't know if it's being more comfortable about it, but it's resolve. And, you know, throughout your life, people are saying things to you, and basically what most people are saying to you is your thinking's not right. You're not coming to the right conclusions. Everything you're doing is wrong. And I think most people who become artists, they have a basic resistance to that. And, you know, when I went to graduate school, I was in a workshop and I withstood that criticism that was given to me, you know, with intelligence and open hearts. But basically, I feel like they're my poems. It's my work. And nobody knows what that is but me. So I have guys in my mind. They're all, you know, dead poets now. I'm sure they might be 2 or 3 ago, so long. But it's just a question of resolve, of not giving a damn, and making something that seems not boring. And true to experience. But, you know, when I say experience, I mean as much experience in the world as the experience of what a poem can be. Now, I don't know if I've answered that question, but the answer, I think, is just courage and abandon. You know? Because it's your work. And without you, it doesn't exist. You know, one of the things, you know, I'm a teacher and I teach workshop a lot. And one of the things that I make sure that doesn't happen in workshop, which will happen unless you do something to stop it, is that a poem comes up and everybody goes around the room and says, you know, this is a pretty good poem, but it'd be better if I wrote it. And here's how I do it. you have Walt Whitman in your workshop, and Emily Dickinson comes in and turns in the poem, and you think, this is a terrible Walt Whitman poem. And it is. So, what one of my best friend's late father used to tell us is, no one knows nothing.
And wait, I have one other question. Where are you from? Like,
Pennsylvania.
Oh, right, I did read this.
Spent a lot of time in the Midwest. Most of my teaching life has been in the Midwest. Lived in Berkeley for a while, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, Texas.
I can see I'm from Pennsylvania also, and I can see why that makes sense.
Does Texas give you material for your poems?
No more or less than any place else that I've lived. I pay attention to my surroundings, but really the immediate surroundings. I'm not a big picture kind of guy. So when Texas occurs in my poems, it's usually a version of hell. Because, it, you know, 9 months out of the year, it is hell. I mean, you can turn off your hot water heater. Voila. Yeah. You know, living there, politically, I'm actually the Texas State Poet Laureate. It's a triumph of irony. The biggest thing about that is I got hugged by Wendy Davis. It was like being hugged by something in the Macy's. But yeah, taxes. Mainly, I just do my best to resist it. It's Actually, it's a terrifying place. Well, everybody likes to say, oh, Austin is the Berkeley of Texas. Yeah, it's the Berkeley of Texas. That's like a champagne and bottle of beer. There's so many of them here. There's still lots of guns it's still Texas. You still have to, even in Austin, I think women have to drive in their mods that they have, right to reproductive, that to assert their reproductive rights. It's a frightening state. Cool.
Did you have to be on a waiting list for your second heart?
Yeah, and it's a really curious thing because you have to be near death, but not so near death that they think you're not going to survive. So it's really, right now there are like over 160,000 people in the country who are waiting for organs. So those of you, be organ donors. But the system is very, very managed. And so I had to have advocates to get me a heart. One in particular was just, he's the reason I'm alive. So I wouldn't last much longer than that day, but she knows that. Yeah. It was a weird experience. Don't do it. Thank you.